For September the 17th, 2021, we talk about Storybook Brawl, Lobotomy Corporation, and Oxygen Not Included. Welcome to Level 385. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Mysmith.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. We're back after a week away for Labor Day. I wish I could say it was especially relaxing, but I was ill. Ill enough to go take a COVID test. I was fine. But yeah, laid up for a bit. Let's call it a party sampler of symptoms.
Hmm.
Yeah. We are back and we are here. David, you've been away the longest and you were at an event. You went to Dragon Con out there in Atlanta, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Had a really good, although exhausting time.
Yeah. Hmm.
So, Dragon Cons, for people that don't know, is, I guess, kind of like Comic-Con, except it's pretty much everything. So anything from, like, there's straight up anime track, a British, Doctor Who and Sherlock and stuff track. There's even a post-apocalyptic track that's mostly preppers.
Cool.
Yeah,
They held it in the section of the arena that is under construction.
Exactly. It's thematically appropriate.
They'll make do. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But kind of the big things they're known for, though, is really cosplay is really huge there. So, in particular, not necessarily so much just the, like, random moment over-engineered, like, dude in a mech suit or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But more the people that's like, I'm going to make an Assassin's Creed, Unity outfit using only period-appropriate, like, sewing techniques and materials.
Yeah, like, these are often people with like, Instagram followings who get funded by fans, right?
Right.
Yeah,
right.
It's kind of like prosumer hobbyists, which is a weird category, but it's really impressive stuff.
Yeah, yeah, and it's actually kind of fun. They have a lot of different costume contests. So, like, they have one that is a bodybuilding costume contest.
Jala's going to do that one, right?
Yeah, yeah. I think she's still planning on doing it once there's a year that isn't an apocalypse.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of apocalypse, she's okay. That storm hit Houston. Her power went out, but there was no flooding. The house stands. Just in case anybody was curious.
Yeah.
Continue though.
yeah. So there's one that was all like villain costumes.
Hmm.
Things like that. So yeah, it was. Was a very, very interesting experience. The other big thing there is they have a lot of concerts. So went and saw Frenchie and the Punk and Valentine Wolf.
Okay.
Which are both, I don't know, I don't think bands that anyone knows, but they're a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Probably my favorite bands. Yeah, probably my favorite thing with that is Valentine Wolf is a two-person sort of gothy band. There's a musician that plays electric upright bass, and then a woman who does the vocals.
Mm-hmm.
And outside of this, one of the events they had is the bass player actually did a showing of the old silent movie Cabinet of Dr. Caligari, I think it is.
Yeah, Cabinet of Dr. Caligari, kind of like an early, it was like a German expressionist. Some people call it like a horror movie. It's real trippy.
Yeah, yeah. So like its whole thing is, like you said, very expressionistic. So like all of the sets look like something I don't know, like Bloodborne by way of like paint.
Yeah, yeah.
In terms of like, you know, all of the everything's forced perspective, all of the they couldn't afford lighting, so all of the shadows and highlights are painted directly on like the actors and the scenes and stuff. Mm-hmm. It's really cool. It's actually a pretty good storyline. You know, actually holds up pretty well.
Yeah.
But the cool thing was this bassist, I guess, was doing all of the music and sound effects for it.
Oh, huh. Just on his bass?
And sound effects.
Yeah, so like things like had figured out how to like kind of scrape the bow up his strings to make like the sound of like a creaking door open.
Mm-hmm.
Things like that. So yeah, it was really cool. I'd never seen a silent movie before.
Depending on the one, it can be like surprisingly watchable, let's say.
Yeah. I thought this one really was, like, I thought the story held up. It was interesting. The thing that was interesting to me is, you know, there's the whole thing people talk about, like, oh, in movies, like, no one ever says goodbye on the telephone. Mm-hmm. Like, this whole idea that, like, a movie, anything that doesn't directly advance the plot is cut out.
Yeah.
And that very much hadn't been invented yet. So it's not so much, I wouldn't say, like, things where it would, was it a thing where you watch it, it's like reading, I don't know, Robert Louis Stevenson, where it's like, why is this so freaking long? Mm-hmm. But it was more just minor things where, like, if there was a chase scene, instead of cutting from like the start of the chase scene and then like the main thing, mm-hmm. they'd actually like have a scene where they're like running through the hall to get to wherever they need to go.
Yeah.
I think it's like a double-edged sword, because I think some of the old-fashioned movies, kind of like the Hitchcock ones, they do a really good job of like slowly building tension, and like that's a really nice like change of pace compared to like today's movies sometimes are like necessarily very, very fast moving. But I get what you're saying. Sometimes it can be too much and it's kind of boring, but
yeah,
depends.
Well, and definitely, like, this is technically expressionism, not surrealism, but it is a very surreal movie, by which I mean the adjective, not the movement.
Mm-hmm.
Not the artistic movement. And so, like, I think that sort of thing does add to it in this case.
I see.
Yeah.
Where, you know, it's supposed to be, like you said, kind of drawn out and slowly evolving and those sorts of things.
It sounds like the way you want to watch it. I mean, the first time I saw it was like, you know, on a shitty projector in a classroom, you know, for for a film class, like doing it as a communal activity, as part of an additive, you know, let's say an additive performance. Kind of seems like a
bully.
Yeah. It seems like a really good way to really good way to enjoy it.
Yeah, and I don't know. I'd be interested here. I'm going to try to track down some other viewings of it,
mm-hmm.
because I don't know. Like I said, this band was sort of a gothy band, and so his interpretation of it, at least, was super, super, you know, ethereal and like, I don't know, sounded like, music from, I want to say like a survival horror, except that, I don't know, a survival horror, but more classical.
Yeah, no, I can see that.
So, I mean, it was, you know, it was just, it was very cool.
Nice.
The other big thing is my martial arts instructor and I did a demonstration. So one of the tracks is what they call the Silk Road track. So it's basically any South Asian or Southeast Asian media.
Mm-hmm.
So anything from like was it Kurosawa, like samurai movies, to Godzilla, to Bollywood, K-pop, you know, any of that stuff. And so this particular thing, one of the things they do is basically a show that it's all fans, you know, all people that you know, showed up to see Dragon Con.
It's only fans.
Yes. Yes. I shake my head at you. And so it was like someone doing like Egyptian dancing, someone doing Middle Eastern drumming, different types of belly dance. And then we did the martial arts demo.
Hmm.
And so that went really well. It was really well received and really fun. Talking to the other people. One of the things I really like, and I feel like a very Dragon Con thing, is there's a lot of these things that will be that, except like nerdy themed. Oh, so no. One of the belly dancers was actually I think a professional belly dancer.
Mm-hmm.
And was doing classical belly dance, but while cosplaying as Loki. That's... and like having like, I haven't seen the new Loki yet, so my understanding is this is a thing, having like an alligator as a prop and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So similar, went to a burlesque performance that's actually a similar thing. Nerdy burlesque, which was really entertaining.
Oops, nice. All Lokis. Just 100 different versions of Loki.
So it was a really cool experience. I then, proceeded to sleep for a week straight. So.
Yeah. Are you out of the window where if you possibly got the crud, you would have gotten it?
Yeah, I think so. One of our people actually got like a rapid COVID test and it turned up negative. So probably if they didn't get it, none of us got it. And, we're wearing masks the whole time,
mm-hmm.
which, strangely enough, none of us got the, like you said, the COVID or the con crud.
Huh.
It is a bummer that we're in a time where anytime you have any sort of sickness, you're like, what? Got to get a COVID test.
Yep.
Oh yeah.
Thankfully, the one that I got was free. They were just given. They were giving out the rapid tests at a local hospital. All I had to do was roll up. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, luckily, hardly anyone gets COVID down here in Alabama.
God.
They have such a high vaccination rate; they must be protected down there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
Oh, it was 20% unvaccinated, right? That's what that's the stat I read, right?
it looks so red on the map. I can only assume that means it's hot enough that it won't spread. I think
right, exactly. That's just science.
It is, and as we know, science is just opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Ben, how you doing?
There's so much information out there. We don't need.
No gatekeepers, it's fine. Oh. What you been up to, Ben, since we last talked?
Oh man, we're still doing that, huh?
Yeah.
I lost track of time.
Wait, that was my grind.
Okay. Oh, no. That's fine.
Fast forward to the grind.
I don't think I have anything. I prepared my apartment. I have a friend coming to visit this weekend.
Cool.
I ate dumplings last week because I had a friend from Georgia come visit, who's one of my old coworkers.
Oh, shit!
Yeah,
were they crispy dumplings? Were they soup dumplings? Like, what were you doing?
They are. It's from a place called Din Tai Fung, which has a couple places in Seattle, but is originally from Taiwan. They're spicy dumplings that we didn't get any soup dumplings strictly, but we got spicy dumplings which come with their own sauce and. I tried their hot and sour soup, which I'd never tried, but it was not bad. And we tried like this cut of pork that was really good. That was like an appetizer that I hadn't tried before. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Dude, dumplings, you can't go wrong with dumplings. If you guys are ever in Seattle, let me know and I'll take you out for dumplings.
Yeah, dumplings rule.
Dim sum. It's amazing.
Nice. How about you, Dennis?
Oh, man. Past 2 weeks, I've continued the blitz of art reveals for Deck of Wonders. So that has been a ton of fun. And then we are closing in on a family vacation, which hopefully things where we're going will stay stable enough that there's not trouble getting over or coming back right now. It looks pretty good.
Yeah.
Obviously on the relative scale that this entire crazy world is on right now, but that will be a lot of fun. It's an overseas trip with the kiddos. So I hope to make it back in one piece, but we'll see. Depending on how things go, I might need a vacation from the vacation.
Yes. Yes.
Do you have any like objectives? Are there any like teaching moments you want to? It seems like it's like a special occasion to be with your sons. Is there any
I'll be more specific. We're going to Ireland, so my main objective is to teach them to hold their whiskey.
Their whiskey for their dad when it's at the bar.
Yeah, sure, that too.
That's a skill that'll pay dividends. You want to start that early.
No, I think mostly like we've scheduled it so that there's plenty of things that we can go do, but nothing that's going to like that we can't bail out of if everyone's just having a crabby afternoon.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we're trying to stay in places that we wouldn't mind just being around if we have to be. So
yeah.
Sweet. The schedule can be pared back as we see fit, which I think is about as much as you can ask for.
Nice.
Gonna be overseas in a week.
Yeah. Well, I'm hoping that it all goes without a hitch.
Thank you. Yeah.
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 Is this Ireland the country or Ireland the British hostage?
Yes.
so both then.
I think so.
Okay.
This is like pseudo a 10-year anniversary trip as well.
God, don't fucking say that, dude. Yeah. I happy 10-year anniversary. Also,
we were all there.
Yeah, we were.
It was 10 years is the whiskey anniversary?
I guess so. Yeah. Well, it's 10, which we decided was lame, so it's going to be whiskey instead.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess I haven't talked about that. Yeah, so for our anniversary, we usually do a theme present with the year, and the year is 10, which is lame. And so we just picked three restaurants, one that started with T, one that started with I, and one that started with N, and went on dates to all of those.
That's fun.
As a replacement, because we're like, screw it, we just feel like going to Ireland, and this, you know, we can say we kept our streak of doing themed stuff going.
Yeah.
So it was a good time.
It's a hard one, because, like, they don't even make it's toxic stuff out then.
Yeah. I mean, you could do, like, a field trip to Gatlinburg, I guess, and hammer some tin lanterns or whatever.
Yeah. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't want to speak for you, but part of the fun of that tradition is being creative with it, right?
Exactly. Well, like, you know, for the second anniversary is cotton, and so we went to the land of cotton down to West Virginia. So it's like, we take liberties.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
But yeah, that's been my 2 weeks.
Yeah. No, I was sick. I've been extremely busy with work, and I've been rewatching Breaking Bad. So things are about like normal over here.
What season are you on?
Five now. I'm going to roll into Better Call Saul. Yeah.
Nice.
Yep. Cool. So that's the extended catching up sequence, but that was also part of the grind too. So we're good. So how do we feel about doing the regular kind of show? What with the grind, the multiplayer, and the end boss, and hearing my cat scratch at my wall? Hey, Dottie, can you fucking not?
The regular kind of show, you know, with the grind, the introduction, the grind.
And why don't we get started with
the grind?
The grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. David, I know you accidentally did your grind over the intro. Have you been playing anything, or has it just been prep, travel, and recovery?
So the only thing I've really been playing is No Man's Sky released their third expedition. So these are the challenge mode runs.
It's like the seasons, right?
That was the theory.
Oh, then they changed up the pace.
Yeah, so like it was like one was a month long, then the next one was like 2 weeks, and then there was like 2 months gaps with none of them, and then
it's all a season. It's just a season for different planets. You know, you got to account for proximity to the sun and all that.
Yeah, the tilt. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, like, you know, and if No Man's Sky has taught us anything over the past 5 years, is that plans change.
Yeah, no doubt.
So this one is kind of themed, you know, the previous ones, and in particular, the first one especially, were kind of a rally race where you're, you know, traveling between different solar systems, one after the other to get, you know, reach certain checkpoints. Whereas this one starts you off on a planet with a specialized ship that basically all of its systems are damaged and require very specific parts to repair.
Okay.
And so almost the entire season is just figuring out how to gather parts to fix this ship. And it's only at the very end that you actually are able to get off world and, you know, finally get to, there's like two checkpoints or something.
Yeah.
You know, it's paced more like a Hitchcock movie, I think.
Is there at least new content when you're like looking for the parts?
So the actual gameplay is just like, you know, the general gameplay. However, the release was synced with the release of their Frontiers patch, which basically adds the ability to become effectively the mayor of cities on the planet. So you can basically have these communities that, you know, you have to, you know, protect from attacks and, you know, make decisions about what they should build and resolve disagreements between the residents. And if you do a good job, they can actually grow to, I think the max population is like 200 people. And, you know, you can then, they can be a source of like money and resources and things like that. So there is new content. It's just not directly tied with the expedition.
How psychopathic can you go on being a mayor? Like, can you make like a Thunderdome?
I do not know. I actually haven't engaged with that yet. I was just trying to do the quick run through. And, you know, get the expedition before I go back to my main account and, you know, really dig into this new feature. I do know from screenshots that some of the, disputes can get pretty, silly. So I saw one where these, two of the little frog creatures are apparently fighting over, who a blanket belongs to. And you have to decide.
Do you tear the blanket in two?
I think so. That or you just like exile both of them. I'm pretty sure that's what Crusader Kings taught me.
Well, with a big enough blanket, ripping it in two is actually a great solution.
Mm-hmm.
True. Yeah. So yeah, so that's really all I've got. Just more of the same craziness.
Cool. Yeah. How about you, Ben?
All right. Yeah, I got a few things. I've continued playing Storybook Brawl.
I'm hearing buzz about Storybook Brawl.
It's the Magic streamers. They're the ones who started it. I'm logging on right now to see how many trophies I have for an update. I'm not actually playing it right now. It's sure. I've got 15 trophies. So it's like first place finishes. So that's not bad. But I've apparently put a lot of time into it, but I think I've left it overnight a couple times, so that's probably why.
Yeah.
It's not bad. I've kind of figured out the meta a little bit more as strategies to go. There's like pretty defined strategies in my mind now. There's like animal strategy, prince and princesses strategy, slay strategy, and then kind of like a weird dwarf strategy, and then like there's kind of like a rush to the end strategy that's kind of a anomalous. So like I think I mentioned some of the mechanics of this game, but I'll just reiterate them a little bit. It's like you're drafting a Magic deck, but you're playing games in between every card pick or every round of buying things. It's kind of like SNKRX, where it's like there's a round of buying things and then there's a combat round, then a round of buying things and a combat round. In this case, you're buying like cards, kind of, or like people or storybook type things.
You're doing like a draft. Yeah.
And they're all, a way to think of it is kind of like Magic is they're like the creature cards. So they're all, but they all have like special abilities pretty much. There's not very many like ones that are just like a dud, 2/2 bear or something. And so as you're buying things, you kind of see like everybody's buying from the same pool of things. So you kind of see what's open. So you kind of want to go into certain strategies. If you collect a certain number of them, they level up. You get an artifact similar to SNKRX. And so then there's like trying to adapt to that. If you get like a sweet artifact and then like your person or whatever is like a hero, so they have a special ability. So you're just trying to like find a synergy and exploit it sort of thing and outlast everyone else. The one strategy that I think I found in the last 2 weeks that I hadn't talked about before is the one of there's like a leveling up system. So you start out at level 1 and you max out at level 6. And basically every round of combat, you gain one third of a level. So 3 points will level you up and yeah, so forth. There's like one hero who starts off with the ability of they start off at like a full level higher. So like 3 points higher. And that by itself is like a pretty decent class. But there's one creature that, oh man. All right. Sorry. I'm watching The Simpsons. Get
sorry. Dave was talking about being the mayor and I shared a GIF of Homer imagining what being the mayor was like. And he's in a Western just shooting a repeating rifle, walking down the street. Sorry. Continue.
So one of the heroes starts with like added XP and that's like already high enough of a buff, but there's a creature where they have a slay ability. A slay ability is if they kill another creature, then something activates and it might be like +1 gold to buy things, but this one in particular has +1 XP. Mm-hmm. And so you can pair that with like support creatures, like ones that'll buff the people in front of them with either their health or their attack. And so if you get that sort of thing going, you can like basically, even though you're not collecting like high powered creatures or anything, or not doing any synergies at this low level, mm-hmm. like every round of fighting, they make a kill and you gain an XP. So you get to level 6 before anyone else does. And then you can start buying these like really bomb creatures that'll like just start dominating everyone else. And you'll be like the first one to get like 3 level 6 in a row, which will give you level 6 artifact, which no one else has, you know? So like that by itself is like a decent strategy. So it's interesting the way it's kind of evolved. I mean, the main thing that I can't say highly enough about this game is it's free. So it's like it scratches the same itch as Magic, but it's completely free. So that part's really nice. The thing
you can pay to buy packs or like where
like all games that are free these days, there's different economies in it, and there's always an economy that you get for spending actual US currency whatever currency of your country.
Are people who spend money advantaged in any way, or is it one of those things where it's like, well, you will never get a benefit from putting money into this game? It's all skill.
So this game's in early access right now, so it might evolve. Currently, the only thing you spend money on is buying heroes. And so what that means is at the start of a round or start of the gameplay or a run or whatever, you're prompted with 4 different hero options, and only 2 of them are available for free. The other ones are available for purchase. And there's 2 different economies for what you can purchase it with. One is just like what you get for playing it, like your XP essentially. And mm-hmm. one of them is what you get for putting in money. And so just buying these heroes isn't enough that you get them every time. It's just that they're available for a spot they're at in the future.
Yeah.
So like for example, the time traveling one that I mentioned before, if I buy him, even if he's in one of the locked slots in the future, I can get that one for free. I don't need to like, pay for that or something. So it's basically, like unlocks, but you don't always have them. They're just, you randomly might get them.
Yeah. But it's not an advantage. It's just a different play style that is open to you.
Yeah. And it's like, if there's like someone who's like your favorite or something, go for that. For me, I think I've only unlocked 2 or 3 heroes just with the experience. I haven't put any money into it. But it's just if I get a run where there's 4 people and the 2 that are available like completely suck, then I'll just pick one of the ones that aren't available. So that's kind of been my strategy. But I don't know. There's definitely certain heroes that I think are way better than others, but are probably very, very closely tied with a certain strategy.
Yeah.
there's like one hero where it's like every time your animal dies, your evil characters get +1/+1. And so that's a very evil animal strategy. So it's like you just go strictly for that, and it's kind of laid out before you.
How much can you paint yourself into a corner with something like that?
It's
like, is that hero choice that like I'm doing this strategy and nothing else because of my hero? Or could you have that hero and have a completely different strategy just because you got the cards?
There's definitely, I think it mostly comes up when you get to like level 6, because there's like, I don't know, there's like maybe like 5 to 10 level 6 characters, and they're all like very, very like, if you get like 3 or 4 of them that are like synergistic with one another, like that can win you the game, especially if you get it like ahead of curve. They just like pretty much dominate. And so if you need a very particular one and somebody else is doing the same strategy and they take it before you do, that can cost you the game. So like there are some issues with collisions like that, but it's something that you're kind of, since it's that far along in the game, you'd be aware of somebody else following that strategy ahead of time. So the one I can think of in particular is there's like a dwarf lord level 6 character that like buffs all dwarfs that you have, and it's like pretty essential to winning if you're doing that strategy. So if like 2 people are split and they each have like a couple of them, like, yeah, that's not going to be great for either one of them probably. But what happens is when one person gets knocked out, their characters go back into the pool. So if you happen to beat the other person, then you can, you know, like finish off your set in the subsequent rounds. But yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if I'm like properly hydrated or if I slept enough last night or something, but I'm understanding more of this now. Because I'm relating the term. Last time I didn't know what to make of it. This is sounding like Monster Train to me, actually.
You could put it like that. There's not the like, there's a similar mechanic. It's not like going up through, but there is like a mechanic back row, kind of like Gwent. And there's like interactions with that. I don't know. I mean, I liken it to, it's kind of like Magic, where it's like, there's mechanics, you know, keyword mechanics that they have. I'm hoping the direction that this goes is they'll have like seasons with it, where it's like once every half year or once every year, they'll have like a new roster of characters and like a new meta for you to learn. Otherwise, I think the gameplay will get somewhat stale eventually.
But, yeah, as people figure it out. And yeah.
Yeah, but it's like, it's a much like, happier experience compared to Magic Draft. I don't know how to couch it. It's like it's definitely a different
Hearthstone aesthetic. Yeah,
it's not like Magic kind of feels like a drug. So like, so this doesn't feel like that exactly. So take that however you want to take that.
But, yeah.
Yeah. No, if any of you guys want to play it or want a Sherpa or anything like that, let me know, because I'd be happy to either demonstrate how to play it or walk you through it. I think it's fun. I don't think it's like other games where it's not like heavy on like pay to win or anything like that. And it's not like, I don't think it's that like addiction heavy or anything like that, where it's like trying to like juice you for money or anything like that. So I think it's pretty responsible there, I guess. So
what you're saying is you really can quit anytime you want.
Yeah. I would want to say that if that did not make me sound like an addict. So yeah.
I feel like to me that's something where my conclusion is I haven't identified how it's screwing me.
Yeah. It could be. I mean, yeah, I don't know. It's still in early access and there's like a way for people to make money off of it. So for people who want to buy into it. So I figure that they're just content with that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if there was a change in the pay model in the future and there's try to be more business-like or something like that. But
yeah. And there's a long tradition of paying for entertainment in society. So that's fine too.
Fair point.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I have 2 more to talk about besides that one. Are there any other questions about Storybook Brawl?
No, it's just it's one of those things where like I saw people kind of talking it up on Twitter and I was like, I know that game because Ben's tuned into stuff. Neat.
I only knew about it because all the Magic streamers I watched started playing it. So
yeah. Yeah.
That was my window into it.
You were ahead of the curve. So
The other one I want to talk about is I have been playing Magic Arena, which I know I've talked about a bunch, but they have a thing called a Tinkerer Cube out right now. And for those who don't know, like a Tinkerer Cube means like there's a lot of like synergistic cards they put in the set. It's a lot of like historic cards as well. So it's like cards with like higher power levels. Mm-hmm. And the idea is like when you draft, you're trying to find like a really synergistic build and then try and put something really awesome together. And so sometimes it works. It feels really awesome. Sometimes it doesn't. You just get trampled and you just scrub out and that's fine. One of the nicer things about this draft over their other typical drafts is because it's historic cards, it's called like a phantom draft, which they have this like in the other version of Magic Online, where you don't keep the cards that you pick, but then it's a much cheaper cost. It's 4,000 gold coins, whatever that means to somebody.
Historic card, that's a euphemism for this was balanced out of competitive play.
Forgive me. There's like three different types of classifications of cards. There's like standard, which is everything that's in rotation right now. So cards been out in the last like year and a half. Okay. There's modern, which is like everything from 2008 or something like that. There's some like arbitrary cutoff time. And then there's historic, which are cards like before that even. Hmm. And so actually this one might even just be modern cards, not mm-hmm. standard cards. They don't have anything like Black Lotus or like the Power Nine or anything like that in the draft, but they do have like things like Brainstorm. I don't know if these cards land for anybody. I think they have like things like Bitter Blossom in the cube, but it's like things that are a higher power level than your typical set. So the idea is like you can get more like busted decks and stuff.
Yeah. I know Black Lotus. Yeah. Here's a question. I'm sorry to take you off on a side bet here. No. I, or say a side thing. I only know Black Lotus from memes where people pretend like, oh, look, I found this card. And I took a clothespin and I hooked it to my bike tire. So it would sound like a motorcycle. Just basically people mm-hmm. posting memes or photos, trying to get people upset that they destroyed something really, really valuable. Is Black Lotus, is that actually a good card? Why is that so expensive?
that's a fair question. I don't even know. Let me look. I want to look up the cost of a Black Lotus.
I think it's like the last time I looked, it was about 17,000. It might have changed with the pandemic, but
yeah, it could be something like that. I think it's one of those things where it's similar to like Pokemon cards first edition, where it's like, oh, this came out so long ago, like you just can't get them anymore.
Yeah,
you know, like the supply is kind of set. And so I think that's kind of where the value comes from a little bit. Mm-hmm. The card itself is you sacrifice it and you get three mana of any color. And okay. So kind of putting it as analogous to like Storybook Brawl, this is like for one turn, you're level six and instead of level three. And so it's like you basically for one turn, you can do something that's much more than you can do than your opponent. And so yeah, if you had this card, it's usually something that can make you like win the game pretty quickly.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. Okay. I was just curious.
Yeah, that's... Mine to say is it's also a card that is would make almost any deck better as opposed to being something that's, you know, more specialized.
Yeah, it gives you mana of any color and it costs zero. And so yeah, like the Power Nine, like the other ones are like there's like of the Power Nine, it's like these nine cards that are like overpowered that were banned early on or something, but they're like really valuable cards that were made early on when they didn't really know how to balance things and things were fucking wild. But like of the Power Nine, there's like five of them are a zero cost artifact where you tap it and it gives you one of that color of mana.
Oh,
between
wow.
Like white, red, blue. So this one by itself is three times as good as those.
Yeah, and so yeah.
That's kind of to give, but the idea is you sacrifice the Black Lotus instead of like it being a recurring thing to give you mana. So
yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't mind talking about any of this, by the way. This is like, it's interesting to watch people like play this 30-year-old game or whatever. But mm-hmm. Yeah, just the idea is like when you get to historic, all the cards are so, so good. Like some people will win on turn one, you know, without spending more than one mana or something, you know, with some busted combination. So since that's an effect, you know, like the idea of like having a card that gives you, you know, like three times that amount, you know, for nothing, it just costs you one card slot, you know, it's something that can give you the game. So that's why it's kind of valuable. But yeah.
Nice.
Anyway,
continue. Sorry. I just,
so they have a Tinker Cube right now on Arena with some of these sorts of cards. So it's been fun to draft around. It's been really cool to see, like, to be like, on your pack one, pick one or whatever, be like, oh, I think I'm going to go for this. Like, there might be a strategy around this and like trying it out and then like getting rewarded and being like, oh, wow, there's a lot of card support for this like kind of crazy strategy. So like I picked like Death Touch creatures one time and like there's a bunch of cards that supported that sort of strategy where you could touch creatures. And if you swung with them enough, then you could like win the game pretty easily.
Yeah.
Or there's like a Minotaur strategy, or there's like an enchantment strategy. There's like all sorts of things. So yeah, kind of comparing it to like Storybook Brawl, it's like the idea of a cube is it's like a new set of cards or whatever. So it's kind of like a new meta. And so that's like kind of why it's enjoyable to play. It's like figuring out like a new set of like, okay, this card's really good in this set because there's this many cards that can support it.
Mm-hmm.
That sort of thing. So anyway. Nice. I don't have to talk too much longer about that other than saying that it's been pretty fun.
Yeah.
But it's still the same old magic. I got one other game to talk about.
Okay.
I was itching to find like a strategy game to play over the. And so I picked up a game that kind of looked close to it that was well reviewed called Oxygen Not Included. Have you guys heard of this game?
This is like space door fortress. Like I picked this up on sale. Yeah,
it's kind of like feels similar to maybe the idea of RimWorld. I haven't played enough of RimWorld to know if that's true or not.
Similar deal. You're making a space station instead of a colony.
Yeah, and yeah, I guess, and then yeah, visually it looks kind of like Fallout Shelter or XCOM sort of thing, where it's like a side view. You're in ground. You can kind of dig through it and excavate it and make things. I'm playing on like the regular like low pressure, like you're not gonna die quickly sort of mode.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of just showing you kind of like the mechanics of the game and like what the tech tree is. And it's interesting. The idea is you kind of have to choose where to dig. I haven't really dug outside of like the starting happy world. You can kind of see like pockets off in the perimeter where there's like monsters running around and stuff like that. I'm like, yeah, I'm not gonna. But like you're dealing. So you have different characters. The characters have random attribute roles.
Random like, what? I'm sorry.
They have like random attribute roles. It's like they have like random skills. It's instead of it being like D&D where it's like strength, constitution, whatever. It's things like agriculture, medicine, things that are similar to like skills in the D&D system, but it's specific to this game, like this flavor of it.
Yeah, but mostly like, hey, this is station this person here. This person will be most valuable. Working this facility. Yeah.
The way the game works is you don't like explicitly tell people to do things. You just state chores to do, mm-hmm. and then the people themselves will figure out what to do.
Yeah.
So I might just state like, hey, mop up this area, and then among like the NPCs or whatever, whoever's like closest and available and might have the better skill or whatever, they'll figure it out amongst themselves, and then one person will go and like do that.
Yeah.
But then the chores are more complicated than just that. You can tell people to research things. You can tell them to run on a treadmill to power the station that you have. Yeah. One thing that's particular about this game that I haven't seen in others is there's like a pretty robust overlay system. So by pressing like F1 through F12 or whatever, you can change different overlays with how you're looking at the world. And each one like has a different piece of information it's giving you. So mm-hmm. for example, there's like an electricity overlay where it shows everything that's generating electricity and everything that's taking it so that you can figure out and like balance it out. Mm-hmm. And like as chores, you can tell people to like build cables between two things, like between your battery and between the thing that needs power to get it to work. But there's also like a germ overlay where it's like when people use the bathroom or whatever, it'll create germs. And so you like can ask people to sanitize different areas or they do it automatically at the start of the day. But you can build like sinks and they'll like automatically keep themselves clean. But there's an entire overlay to kind of see like where the sources of contamination are and like how you can kind of like manage it.
Yeah.
It's kind of like
the heat overlay in Frostpunk.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like that. But they have it for a lot of different things. Manage everything. I haven't really hit a difficulty spike yet. It's just more deciding like what do you want to go after.
Mm-hmm.
The tech tree is like pretty much given to you up front, and it's like here's everything you can unlock. Go figure it out, you know. So, like, it looks like eventually you get to, like, you build exosuits and you can build a rocket ship. And I think, so I think it's similar to, like, Factorio in that sense, where, like, the, or Subnautica, where it's, mm-hmm. like, the end goal is build a rocket ship and, like, fly out or something.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like, for example, another overlay is, like, your oxygen or your, like, gas system, like, what gases are around. And they'll, like, they have, like, basically an alert system that's kind of like a logger, where it's telling you like what everyone's doing or different news or whatever, but it'll pop up with like alerts when it's like, hey, you're not producing enough oxygen. Like your people are going to eventually die because there's oxygen that's being produced right now. And so that'll give you like more of a direction for any short-term goals you need to do, if any.
Right.
Yeah. And then they have a time mechanic where you can like speed up the game if you want or slow it down. So like if everybody has enough chores where it's like, you don't need to, pay attention to the day-to-day, then you can just like fast forward the game and then like run through a day pretty quickly. And then pause it whenever it's back to ready for you to do stuff.
This sounds exceedingly like RimWorld and therefore like a game I absolutely should not touch.
Yeah, I'd only played RimWorld a little bit. It opened up way too quick for me that I never burn it. This mm-hmm. one kind of eases you into it a little bit better as far as giving you like very short-term objectives yeah. and like how to figure things out a little bit better. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I can see similarities to them for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. Interesting game. I don't know if, I don't know how long I'll stick with it or like, if I'll, you know, eventually lose interest or not, but it's kind of like an interesting sim for now. So yeah.
It sounds badass.
Yeah. I think the only other thing I'll mention is I tried to get a game called Dice Legacy that came out, but it does not run on Windows 7, which normally games that say they don't run on Windows 7, they actually do, because there's not a lot of differences between Windows 7 and Windows 10, but right. this one actually does not. It will hard crash when you try and launch it. So
if this yeah. is something you don't want to talk about, that's fine. Why aren't you up into Windows? Why haven't you done Windows 10?
I mean, I'll get it eventually, but the idea of an operating system monitors everything. So
wait. So the idea of an operating system that what
has ads and then monitors everything you do.
Yeah.
Doesn't sound appealing to me. That doesn't feel like the function of an operating system.
Yeah. So. It's not great. Stable stuff runs. But, mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's true. Games work on it. That is a plus side to it.
Oh God. Nice. Yeah. So, Storybook Brawl, Magic Arena and Oxygen not included.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, I made a promise the last time we were on that I was going to play new stuff, and play new stuff I have.
Okay.
So with the kids back in school, they're now kind of getting home at a consistent time and have gotten their learning stuff in. So I wanted to find a game to like consistently like, hey, let's play a game when we get home from school, kind of hang out with them.
Yeah.
And so I found Plants vs. Zombies Battle for Neighborville.
Oh, fun.
And this was a PlayStation Plus game, but it is, I guess it is the third installment in the Garden Warfare series.
That is very clever. I've always thought that was a good name.
Pretty great. And I'm extremely disappointed that they moved away from the name. And I have to imagine there was some kind of like when Modern Warfare came back, Activision or whoever was like, hey, you got to stop.
Yeah. Hey, EA, can you get off of our, yeah.
Because only that kind of BS could take away such a joyful name as the Garden Warfare series. But anyway, so there's Garden Warfare 2, and then this one is Battle for Neighborville. And it is, you know, a large team, class-based shooter in the Plants vs. Zombies universe. And so everything, you know, instead of machine guns, you've got like ping pong ball launchers for the zombies, or corn where the kernels pop off as submachine guns for the plants. And so it's all kind of cutesy fun stuff like that.
Yeah.
And there's a pretty wide range to the way the classes play in terms of, you know, some are just straight up melee classes. Some actually transform. I'll talk about that in a second. But, you know, basically it is a kiddified team shooter. It's a game of that ilk, a third person shooter that I feel very comfortable playing around my younger kiddos. Mm-hmm. So it's been a lot of fun. the design of the characters, both visually and from like a mechanic standpoint, is very interesting. Like I said, they've got a lot of good variety, but I think it works against them in some ways. And this could be me needing to just learn the game better, but it's been a while now and it still feels confusing that all the various silhouettes and then layer on top of that, all the various skins that every single character can have, make it very confusing.
Ooh,
as you're trying to parse, like, ooh, is that my team's little fast guy coming at me or the other team's little fast guy coming at me? Or like, you know, what exactly am I looking at here? Is this, oh, okay, this is that one class, but it's skinned to look like a chicken now. That's clever. But also I had no idea what it was until I died to it. So
that's why you shoot everything
great.
That moves.
Yeah. Honest to God, that's been my policy. Combined with the fact that battles tend to take place over surprisingly long distances. It has that battlefield feel to it where it's like I'm shooting at someone that is really far away and like, you know, I'm scoping in to target them. But they can kind of just duck behind a wall and I can kind of just duck behind a wall and we're, you know, I'm waiting for teammates to flank and stuff. So the arenas are large, and it feels like that space, like engagements over that full space are possible and common. It's not just run until you find someone to shoot. Like you kind of do feel these lines being drawn and kind of engage at a distance, which is very appreciated. There's only one character that I've found that is like a straight up sniper for either side. And even that, it feels like that is kind of an option for how to play it. But every character feels like it can engage at distance pretty well. So that was a nice surprise. Like I would say it's a surprise, but I don't really think I had any idea of what I was getting into or any preconceived notions about what the game was going to be. It is filled with Battle Pass BS.
Of course.
So prep yourself with that. And like I said, that contributes to the visual kind of confusingness of the game. But overall, it's been a lot of fun.
Nice.
I have been doing kind of an artificial challenge mode where I just tell the boys, like, all right, you guys pick whatever character you want me to play, I'll play. And so sometimes it's every time I die, I'm swapping into a new character. So I'm definitely learning the roster.
Yeah. And,
get your talents well-rounded.
Nice.
But yeah, that's been a good time.
Yeah. You played the main Plants vs. Zombies games, right?
Yeah, a long, long time ago. And like I played it when it was the original PopCap browser-based deal.
Yeah,
And loved it. You know, it's such a strong aesthetic, and it's kind of interesting to see where PopCap has gone with it, as they've been snapped up and are now kind of big business, I guess. I went back and I downloaded the, you know, free to play version of the original Plants vs. Zombies on my phone, and I didn't think it held up that well.
No,
Which is, it's probably a combination of things. The first is that game starts incredibly slow.
Yeah.
Like it takes a long time before you feel like any decision you make endangers you in any way. Like basically as long as you're putting down plants in every row, you're never going to have to worry. I haven't even used the lawnmowers that they give you as a backup.
Yeah.
And so there's just a very slow build for, you know, what's now a mobile game that I've been trained is a quick hit. And so levels just take a little longer than I'd like, and there's a little less danger than I'd like early on. Although I'm starting to get to the point where that is changing. The other problem is they have crammed a whole bunch of watch this ad BS down your throat.
It's really bad. We did it for WoW 2 years ago, so relatively recently. I'll go look, and it was 5 years ago or something. But yeah, I went, I was like, oh, I bought this game forever ago on iOS. No, the version I bought isn't made anymore. It's the free to play. So I ended up like,
well, that's the crappy thing. It's like, I could see just getting it again, but it's not available in any form other than, please be a whale, which is
right.
Disheartening.
Yeah.
So that's unfortunately I kind of noped out of it after a bit. But their current installment, the Battle for Neighborville, holds up well.
And the boys are having fun watching it? Are they having a good time?
Very much so, yeah. although they've started talking about zombies have now become, I think, much more forward in their minds.
Right.
So, oh, we're running from the zombies while they're playing. Or like, can you check for zombies? And it's like, these are the most cartoony zombies in the world. Like ones wearing, literally wearing football pads.
Yeah.
Like they're, we've done everything we can do to make them not scary. It's just the concept at this point.
They're still dead guys.
It is still dead guys. Yeah.
Okay. The Plants vs. Zombies pirates, episode though. Was 2020. So that's good. Woof.
Yeah.
Continue.
So that's a Battle for Neighborville. I also just, you know, I've got Final Fantasy on the brain. I've been playing the MMO a lot. And so I booted up Final Fantasy VII Remake to play.
Yeah. That also was a PlayStation Plus one, right?
It is. Yeah. Well, you know, all these things show up in my catalog and I assume it's through PlayStation Plus, but I'm not really paying that much attention. I just make sure I download the stuff every month.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's like either I got this for free at some point or it was PlayStation Plus or whatever, but yeah, I think it was. And I will say from the top, I am surprisingly ignorant of Final Fantasy VII in general.
Did you never played it back in the day?
Never played it back in the day. I know, like, you know, the big plot points that you just can't avoid if you're going to be in gaming at all. But really, I didn't know much about it apart from those huge plot points. Mm-hmm. And so it's been a real joy to kind of discover this version of the game without a ton of preconceived notions on what I should be seeing. And I'm sure there's a million kind of like nods or Easter eggs that I'm missing because of that. But it's also nice to come to this remake on its own terms. As I understand it, it does kind of change a lot.
So I haven't played through it all, so I don't have like a comprehensive list. It mm-hmm. definitely changes the scope because it does only cover kind of the first chapter of the game. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And from what I understand, the ending of it probably even makes that inaccurate, that thing I just said inaccurate. So we'll see how that goes.
They designed it to be kind of an episodic deal, right?
Yeah, yeah. They knew it was going to be multiple pieces. But yeah, it's definitely something that like is slick on its own, but they are leveraging nostalgia for it.
Yeah. And so, you know, obviously the biggest change is that it's now like real-time combat.
Yeah.
Or action combat, I guess you would call it, where you're mashing square for your basic attack and then, you know, peppering in what would be your turns as kind of moves as your active time battle gauge fills. Yeah. And what I've learned about myself is it is impossible for me to think strategically while mashing the square button. It feels good to mash square. It's intense.
And you think, hey, that should be enough.
Yeah, I don't want to stop to think and all of that. And so I will, even though like when you bring up your actions menu, you know, to spend your points, your time gauge or whatever, everything slows down to a stop.
Mm-hmm.
But I still feel like I have to like speed through that menu and just pick the first thing I can think of without really considering the battlefield or the right targets, just because it feels like an action game. I want to get right back in there.
Yeah.
And I'm low enough level early enough in the game that most of the time I'm only controlling Cloud. So it does feel very single character.
Mm-hmm.
And I can get through most fights by just mashing square. So I've probably put myself in a lot more trouble than I needed to just from not using the abilities available to me. Cause it's cool to watch a guy swing a gigantic sword.
Yeah. Yeah. And like they don't do much early on to dissuade you from playing it like a character action game. I eventually, kind of started thinking about it less in terms of always be attacking and more about like, this is the combo that is called for right now. And thinking of that as the unit of what I should
do
be
not,
doing?
I do not have that capacity when button mashing is available to me.
Okay.
I would think of it. I agree with you. I acknowledge that is correct.
I wish I could play it like that.
We have stumbled onto a personal blind spot where if I can mash a button, I'm going to mash a button. And then all strategy goes right out the window. Yeah, I imagine this and people have confirmed that, like, you know, once you get a more full party, you're kind of zipping back and forth to whoever has action points to spend.
Yeah.
And it's less mashing square and more just kind of spending the points, swap for the next character, spend their points, etc.
Yeah, especially with the bosses, you end up really needing mm-hmm. what you end up gaining gaming is the heat meter more than anything.
Mm-hmm.
Or whatever, that's really fun to
kind of keep that in mind. Like I don't know what the analog to that was in the the original version of Final Fantasy VII?
There really wasn't. I mean, like the closest thing that you had was like limit breaks and stuff, but like that doesn't have anything to do with stagger. Like the that kind of thing wasn't really an element in Final Fantasy games until 13 and 15.
Interesting. But yeah, there is that incentive to kind of stack up your attacks to get the stagger. It's like, you know, okay, what am I going to use to get this person staggered? And then what am I going to unleash to follow up once they are staggered?
Right.
And that is interesting. Again, if I had the capacity to think in those terms.
So are limit breaks no longer a thing?
They are. They're in the game.
Oh, they're still there.
Yeah.
Each character kind of has their special move. I don't really, I've just come upon them. I don't know if there's like one limit break that is shared and you spend on one character, or if each character builds to their own limit break.
I believe each character builds to their own. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Very cool. And so, yeah, they each get their own overpowered move, which is fun.
Mm-hmm.
It is a very pretty game, but the section I am in is very monotone.
Yeah.
It is, you know, industrialized city complex, and then the area under the industrialized city complex, which is just a slightly more sandy industrialized city complex. So I understand it. Eventually it will open up. Eventually there will be more colors, but it's a lot of steel and gray right now.
Yeah. Like the first chapter of Final Fantasy VII takes place in that city. It takes place in Midgar.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not going to get a tremendous amount of variety. You're going to go from like run down corporate industrial to like, you know, fancy shiny corporate industrial.
Yeah.
And then like obviously like ruins and places where nature is kind of taking over as you know, the place is completely mismanaged. Yeah.
I'll believe that when I see it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is a shame though, because the game is beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's a very pretty game. And I'm going to talk sugar about the character design for a second. Specifically of Barrett, your giant machine gun armed, group leader who, just yells at everyone about everything and goes on rants about
real pro wrestler vibe.
Yo, is he
Mr. T?
that's who he was modeled after in the original.
That was in the brief for the character for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know, so you get introduced to him as this like just scream at everyone crazy guy, and then once you get kind of out of your initial mission, you go back home, and he you know meets up with his daughter.
Yeah.
And the thing that struck me was like for the entire time he's got his sunglasses on, real mm-hmm. real sunglasses at night kind of dude,
mm-hmm.
And is just the severest, craziest, you know, person in your team. And then he gets back home, you know, he's got a little daughter there, and he takes off his sunglasses, and I saw it, and I'm like, those are like the kindest eyes I have ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't explain what goes into it, but like seeing the character in that moment, like the sunglasses come off and you're like, oh my God, you're just a big teddy bear.
Yeah.
That was nailed. Like they got that perfect, in the remake. And, that's, you know, that's something you can't do when you've got sprites,
mm-hmm.
but I just really appreciated that. And it's a small touch. But the level of fidelity that the remake brings, felt like it was being used very well in that instance.
It's a bunch of stuff that had to be conveyed kind of purely through dialogue before, you know,
mm-hmm,
cause
mm-hmm.
he always was, you know, that kind of stock, that stock character archetype, somebody who's mm-hmm. hard at work, but then soft with his family. But like, he also was always a crime boss, really, you know, you're part of a terrorist group, but like he takes responsibility and is very invested in the care of people in Sector 5. Mm-hmm. I believe it's Sector 5.
He's a good bad guy,
you know. Yeah. He's very invested in their quality of life, you know, like a mafia don would be, because, you know, the system isn't taking care of them. So he has to, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm excited to see all that explored as the game winds on.
Yeah.
And yeah, like I said, this is me coming to this icon of gaming, with relatively little knowledge. So I'm mm-hmm. just kind of, it's cool to make connections and be like, oh, like that design seems familiar. Even though I've never played the original game, like I've seen that design elsewhere.
Yeah.
That's cool. And it's certainly the connections to Final Fantasy 14 and just that style of world are there as well.
It'd be kind of like going back and watching an Alfred Hitchcock film for the first time. I mean, no, just that after a lifetime of watching The Simpsons, right? Where like, oh, this thing was so influential that I have seen so many like homages to it and seen parts of it like referred to obliquely. I'm not comparing Final Fantasy VII to Alfred Hitchcock. That's, you know, not a comparison.
I don't get Hitchcocky. All right.
Yeah, yeah. That's not something I would like to make. But it's a similar idea where you are seeing, you know, something like, oh yeah, like that is familiar to me because I've picked it up through cultural osmosis.
So that's my impressions of the game so far. I'm still pretty early in it, but I've kind of had the two ends of the spectrum, the super heavy JRPG with a hint of action, and then a super bright and kitty garden warfare game going on.
Nice.
And that's me.
Yeah. I only have one new one on my end, because I've most of my playtime has been taken up by Darkest Dungeon, which we recorded that episode today. Boy, that's a good game, but man, it's rough to do roguelikes for that show.
Are you doing? I've seen the first expansions.
No, just the base game.
Yeah. I've seen the first 15% of that game probably 6 or 7 times.
Oh, me too. Before a thing about Watch Out for Fireballs is there are any number of games that I bounced off of many times that when it gets on the schedule, like, well, fuck, I guess I'm playing all this now. Yeah. Yep. So it ended up being a real, a time investment.
Okay. Did you beat the Darkest Dungeon?
Yes. Yeah.
You did better than I did.
it was tough. Just by the skin of my teeth. But yeah, did it.
Did you get your original party there?
No, God, no. No,
did
no.
You farm, did you farm level ones for their sanity?
So Dennis, you were the only person to walk away from the first boss of the Darkest Dungeon. David, I am real sorry. You were one of my plague doctors. I named the plague doctor David before I realized that in this game the plague doctors are women. So apologies.
But
I sacrificed you and Gary. Gary was my occultist in the final party to the final boss. Ben, you made it out. I think it was this. No, it was the second one. You were my man at arms. So you made it out of the second one.
Cool.
Yeah.
So my Darkest Dungeon story is I'm on track to make the original party have them survive to the end, only because there's a random event that will revive one of your dead party members.
Yeah, yeah. Ooh. Crossing the river Styx. Just like, oh yeah, no, it was somebody, they're back. You there, David?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, okay. So my hope is to then, with a second chance, make it to the end.
Yeah, yeah.
Nice.
And there's an achievement for getting to the end with the original people that you start with in the tutorial, Reynald and Dismas. Yeah.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. We're going to be talking about that. We recorded for about 4 hours on that earlier today. So the only thing that I've got new is kind of a disappointment. I streamed a game called Lobotomy Corporation.
Over
the weekend. I kind of justified it. It is a kind of like a management sim that is also like a side on base builder kind of thing. But it is kind of themed after SCP, where you are a manager who is hired in at this company and this kind of dystopian future that is run by corporations, and this company, like, everybody is named after the seraphim from the Kabbalah and stuff. Like, there's some real like high, you know, mysticism, Gnosticism kind of thing going on, but at least in the theming and the way the AIs are named and stuff, there's kind of a meta story that I didn't see an awful lot of. But the idea is this corporation has found a new energy source, which are these anomalous creatures and objects And so, you know, you pick kind of a random item from like a list of kind of like three sentences from the lore of that item. And then these go into little containment fields, and you hire people and kind of allocate their stats, and then work to, they go and do work with them. And as they work with these anomalous creatures, the power is drawn, and your goal for each day is to meet your power requirement, while also dealing with the fact that as you work with them, there are meltdowns and containment breaches, and kind of dealing with the sanity breaks in your character players, or in your staff, and also just people generally kind of going nuts and attacking each other and things. This could be just entirely up to the fact that it was very early on. I did the tutorial, and it felt like that would have been enough. Felt very much on rails. Additionally, it also kind of felt like it was kind of a guessing game, because for each of these individual creatures, you go and you do like one of four different kinds of work. It's like instinct work, empathy work, affection work, or judgment work. And each of those are tied to like different stats, and they respond differently to different kinds of input based on like the level and, you know, strength of the individual characters and things. So you start with somebody and they're new, and you send them down there, and it's like, okay, based on what I can see of this thing, my best guess is that try this one. You're good with this kind of work, and I'll send you in there to do it. And then by experimenting with them, you get some feedback on it, like whether or not it went well or poorly. And then you just have to kind of course correct from there. So it was very much just kind of like messing with them, but also, you know, messing around in trial and error, but also like there was no real like downside to, you know, doing the wrong kind of work, because you had unlimited time like within a given day, and the individual characters could go and, you know, replenish their sanity by like resting in the lounge kind of thing. So like, I think that early on, it just wasn't it wasn't to the level of complication where it could be like as mechanically rigorous as I would want this kind of management sim to be.
Did you recognize? Oh, go ahead.
It sounded like the gameplay was similar to like L.A. Noire. It's largely like just exploring conversation trees.
No, it's not like that at all. You're not, you know, kind of like you're not gauging anything about what the creatures are saying or anything about the interactions. It's literally just, this is the kind of work I want to do with them. You see the result, and then you go and try different things based on that.
You couldn't understand their language if you tried, and if you did, it would break your mind.
Yeah.
You know. Did you recognize any of the creatures, and that did that ever give you an edge? Like, oh, this is this Lovecraftian crazy thing, and I remember that those respond to whatever.
Yeah, no, many of them are close analogs to other, you know, like actual SCP entities. I am not familiar enough with the deep lore of SCP to like know any particular ones, especially well enough to get a leg up because of that. But like the ones that I got were cool. Like there's a, you bring it in and the entity is just a small bird, just a small white bird. They brought a little fake tree into the habitat because they figured, hey, he would want to perch on that. And you think, okay, how dangerous could this be? As you work with it and learn about it, you learn that this is the judgment bird. If he finds you wanting, he will punish any sinners who come to it. And he punishes because underneath his feathers, you can see places where his skin breaks apart, and he has teeth in places where he shouldn't. It just kind of turns into a big old mouth. There's one that's like the sentence that was like, it was the recording of the day we must not forget. And it's not like a corporeal object. It's like a frequency that the room is tuned to. And and the room like just has like a static overlay, and when you're zoomed in on it, you hear like the sound of like gunfire and screaming and stuff. And as you know, like the written story stuff in this is pretty good. Like as you study it, like they start talking about this, you know, corruption, like it's leaking out and causing people to act erratically. And then it becomes very clear that this frequency is playing the sound of the chaos that it will eventually cause when it causes people to snap.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Man, they got unlimited content for this, as they can just go through the SCP like archives and pretty much anything. I can't wait till IKEA shows up.
Is IKEA an SCP?
Really, really cool.
There is an SCP that is an IKEA.
A whole IKEA store?
It's so it's a joke on how hard it is to find your way out of IKEA. So it's basically IKEA by way of House of Leaves.
Okay.
It's pretty good, all things considered.
I think one of my favorites is the recording of some basketball game that every time it plays, basically the people inside the inside the recording relive the events, so that eventually they realize that they're in a time loop.
Oh god.
Oh wow.
And it's just most of the article is documenting their reactions to where it's like, yeah, play like 200, all of the fans proceed to charge the court and attempt to ritualistically sacrifice the players in order to try to appease the gods.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man. And have you guys ever
heard stuff?
Have you ever heard of Delta Green?
Oh god, yeah.
No, okay, this is making me want to play Delta Green. It's a role playing game based on the Call of Cthulhu system that is all about, it's basically SCP themed, mm-hmm. and you're like the field teams that have to go retrieve or contain this kind of stuff.
Yeah, I was just reading in a Delta Green source book from 2019 a few weeks ago. It's called The Labyrinth. That kind of like is, you know, kind of makes new enemy and allied organizations kind of based on like internet stuff, like, you know, modern kind mm-hmm. of things. So there's like a, you know, like a fertility cult that is secretly a front for, you know, the goat with 1,000 young, you know, things like that.
There's a pizza shop that fronts this satanic cabal.
I mean, kinda.
Also, I love the fact that the cult was the cover.
Well, no, like it's a fertility company. It's, you know, the cult is in the cover. Oh. Like, you know, we offer, you know, for wealthy people, we offer the, you know, this fertility treatment that ends up being the milk from Shub-Niggurath. And it turns out that, you know, any child born to that is, you know, not quite human. And basically a couple of generations down the line, all of the globe's elite will be replaced with these, you know, with these other otherworldly hybrids. Now, the cool one and the thing that brought me to it is in the Labyrinth, one of the factions is called the Lonely. And it's kind of like a like incel anonymous kind of thing. It's like individual people who are driven to troll and harass and ultimately kill people and kind of do stochastic terrorism by this person who seems to only exist online called Captain Sunshine. They're driven to do this because they find like a book that nobody else seems to know about that happens to like feature a character that is named after them. And, you know, it's like, oh, this is really weird. Turns out that, Captain Sunshine is an avatar of Haster, AKA mm-hmm. related to the King in Yellow. So this is just a way to adapt, the cult of the Yellow Sign to the internet age. Fucking rules is what it does.
Yeah. It's pretty great.
Yeah.
So, now we gotta go play that.
Yeah.
I digress.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've tried to make several approaches to SCP kind of stuff because it's kind of difficult. There are lots of entries, you know, to try out. Buddy, friend of the network, Zach, he sent me a text saying like, hey, check out this book called "There Is No Anti-Mimetics Division," and that's really good because the Anti-Mimetics Division basically is trying to cover up the fact that they oh god, this is really complicated.
The anti-mimetics are basically like mind wipe, right?
Yeah, but also trying to cover up the evidence of them doing mind wipe. Just basically, how do you convince people that something doesn't exist that exists to convince to make people act as though something else doesn't exist? It's real recursive and trippy and very good. So
yeah.
Nice. Yeah.
That sentence was in the book was as well, I imagine.
It's conveyed much better than I can do it off the top of my head.
The other thing that's kind of fun is the articles on how to write SCP articles are actually really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a fascinating community. I've taken to like just watching YouTube videos about the movements in the community over the course of years. Regardless, like the things that are cool about this game seem to be things that are just kind of inherent to the form. There are cool ideas kind of present in this, but I wasn't really wowed by the play of it. There is a follow-up called Library of Ruina that recently came out that I understand is a little bit better because it's more it is more kind of along the lines of a Monster Train, I believe. You know, something more similar to that kind of deck building kind of deal is my understanding. Stuff from Lobotomy Corporation and moving on to Library of Ruina.
Yeah, what we need is a plugin that like connects those and Control. So like you get a new containment facility and then you zip into it with Control style shooting.
Yeah.
Do the thing and come out.
And
like everything in SCP, it all needs to connect, right?
So of course, yeah.
That's where it should head.
Yeah. So I was a little bit disappointed by that, but it was interesting to try. Yeah. Any questions about Lobotomy Corporation?
Fun to talk about, if not as fun as it should be to play.
Cool. Well, that sounds like a segment to me.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Dennis, what is the question that you asked the nice people?
Yeah, I've got vacation on the brain. So I asked, what video game location would make the best vacation destination? Give us this information. And I don't know how to get out of that.
I disapprove.
Do that, yeah. what video game world would you most want to vacation in or open up a resort in? What is best for vacationing?
Yeah, and I'll get us started here with Eli, who says, take out all the gorilla fighters and aggressive predators, and every Far Cry game is the correct answer to this question.
Get a hang glide with that answer.
I can see that, except for the one set in, was it Jersey or whatever?
There's a Far Cry, New Jersey?
Montana,
whatever.
Yeah. I could see that. Far Cry 1, they've got tropical stuff. I could see it. Let's see. Ben, what does Greg say?
Greg says, surviving Mars. I'd love to go to Mars for a month and just around. Ride in a buggy and climb Mount Olympus Mons. Yes, I realize it takes a while to get there, so you wouldn't want to be working when you took this vacation, as you'd be gone from Earth for over a year.
So I just started watching a Let's Play of this series, and I was shocked by how dark surviving Mars is.
Yeah, no, it's the game rules, but they're making choices.
Well, just like in particular, the part I saw was like unlocking the cloning facility, where it's just like, hey, you can get people that have half of a human life expectancy to work for you.
Yeah. You need people and they're not going to be getting there quick enough. So workers. Hmm. Yeah. Now you're making choices. It's not like as on Front Street as Frostpunk is, but yeah.
Eases you into the crazy.
Yeah. David, what does Thomas say?
Thomas says Fortree City from Pokemon Ruby and Sapphire. It's basically an Ewok village, but with Pokemon.
Yeah. Let's see. Oh, what were you going to say, Ben?
I said that sounds dope.
Yeah, pretty much anywhere Pokemon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let's see, Dennis, what does Callum say?
Yeah, Callum says the Citadel in Mass Effect. I considered this for my answer.
Mm-hmm. That's a good answer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Corbin, you know, if you want a city vacation.
Yes. And, you know, city vacations make sense sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Corbin says, definitely the Alolan region in Pokemon, from Pokemon Sun and Moon, I believe. I get to go to totally not Hawaii, but Hawaii, but there are adorable Pokemon everywhere. Sign me up.
Mm-hmm.
Also a good answer. But then you have kids running around trying to fight you with their monsters. Ben, what does Christopher say?
Chris says, Sigil from Planescape Torment. That place seems so bonkers amazing. As long as I don't accidentally fall through a portal to some hell dimension, of course.
Yeah, the thing about Sigil is you might open a door and then it's the plane of fire. Oops.
Yeah, I feel like there's a lot of, like, deep House of Leaves vibes to Sigil/Sigil.
Yeah, it's a city that is constantly rearranging itself. Yeah, you know, just one of the things in the game is you convince a street to give birth to an alley because the street talks and it's pregnant with the alley. Yeah.
Oh, man.
It's a good game. Let's see. David, what does Rookie say?
Rookie said, I was thinking of saying Shadow of the Colossus, but I have enough respect for you all to say what comes flying out of my heart. I'd love to spend some time in a world where any and all conflicts are settled by metalheaders, engaging in dueling guitar solos. A place where you can just boogie for an afternoon. A twisted reality of nonstop rock concerts with opponents that are born to be bone. What can I say? I'm a 20th century man with toda la passion of a 21st century boy. It's Gitaroo, man.
Gitaroo, man. That was very well put together. Very dense with references to Gitaroo, man. and then Dennis, what does Jack say?
Jack asks that this be read in a transatlantic radio broadcaster voice. Visit beautiful Ash Lake. Trees taller than comprehension. Jumbo clams on hand at all times. Stone statuary of an age gone by, powered by lifelike animatronics. Violent water features. Witness sweet family moments that truly feel like the end of a maudlin side quest. Ash Lake, come for the arch trees. Stay for the podcaster waxing poetic.
Yeah, yeah. At...
Violent water features is what I want on any vacation.
Yeah, I mean, that radio voice is definitely referring to the Hydra that will kill you, probably by landing on you as it tries to jump over the sandbar. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
Yeah. At Ash Lake would be, I don't know about a vacation, it'd be cool to visit. It would be nice to find a place where there was shelter or food, though. And there weren't basilisks who could, turn you into a statue of yourself.
I don't know. That'd be a pretty good souvenir.
Look, stop trying to gentrify Ash Lake, okay?
Just let Ash Lake be Ash Lake, okay? Don't change the character of the neighborhood. Yeah. I'll do mine. I mean, my honest answer is probably Myst, or at least the version of Myst that exists, you know, like in the developer's head where it's livable and like there's food and stuff. It's not just a lifeless rock with cool, you know, portals and stuff. But I'm in kind of a Stardew Valley kind of mode here. So I'll say Pelican Town. I think it'd be cool to rent a cabin in Pelican Town.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah.
I immediately just think of like going to a cabin in Michigan for the weekend.
Yep. That also sounds really cool to me. I would do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Ben, how about you?
Witness Island.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Do I get a room key or anything? Oh, no. You'll figure it out.
I mean, you're there by yourself. You wouldn't need to worry about that.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. How about you, David?
So I feel like a lot of these have like you know, disclaimers on them, and this is going to be one of them. I think No Man's Sky, as long as you could stay away from any of the Lovecraftian horrors.
Okay, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you want them available, though. I don't know, maybe you're feeling spicy one of the nights.
True.
Yeah. Yeah, you want to have access to them, but you don't want them to have access to you. I get it.
Exactly.
Yeah, that kind of... And now we're back to Lobotomy Corp.
And how about you, Dennis?
My answer was also a Pokemon region, and I think I have a workaround for the downside. So you talked about little kids running up and trying to battle you all the time. You really don't want to be pestered. So go to the Lentil region from the new Pokemon Snap game, where there are no battles. It is essentially a nature preserve.
Yeah.
A couple of different biomes, and you can like go hiking and stuff, and see Pokemon.
That solves it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that is, I agree with the trend in answers, and I think I got a solution for some of those pain points.
Yeah.
That you really want to iron out for maximum relaxation.
Nice. That was a good question.
Yeah, those are good answers.
Yeah. Thank you, everybody, for participating. Thank you, Dennis, for posting this. If you would like to participate in these in the future, go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast and watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video game around us, especially that are exciting to us. I've got one here. I talked a little bit about Darkest Dungeon before, had Darkest Dungeon on the brain. Oftentimes when we cover a game for Watch Out for Fireballs, things tend to happen with that game or that series. Like weirdly, there's this serendipity that happens when we choose a game to cover. And turns out that the week that we are releasing the Darkest Dungeon episode, Darkest Dungeon 2 got a release date. So it was announced here. Darkest Dungeon 2 is coming to an early access-ish kind of arrangement on the Epic Game Store on October the 26th. I am kind of like only looking at details about the game out of the corner of my eye, just because I want to go in kind of fresh. But my understanding is that, like, instead of being a massively huge strategy game that takes, you know, tens or hundreds of hours to play, this is kind of more arranged like a Slay the Spire kind of thing, or Monster Train, where like a successful run, like you're in a caravan that is like traveling, you know, and you're making choices about where it goes. Like a successful run, this is like 4 or 5 hours, and then the meta progress kind of carries over from on top of that, which sounds interesting. I am curious, and I trust that developer, especially with mechanical rigor, to make something cool. So I'm jazzed about it. Who knows if we'll get a chance to play it, or when I'll get a chance to play it, but it looks neat.
The classes, the image that they've shared, I assume that image on the page is from the second game. You know, I can immediately recognize all the classes from the first game.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how I feel about that.
Because the individual classes, like those are, it's kind of like Team Fortress. Like those are supposed to be like, they have stories and they're actual characters and stuff, or.
I'm worried that the only thing they will evolve is the meta structure that you're taking these characters through.
Yeah.
I think there's a really cool opportunity to, I don't know, just experiment and be like, hey, here's an all different set of types of people that you can bring along. Which, you know, they will have to look different, I imagine, because the way the game plays is going to be different.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I just love to see them go beyond that, which I, you know, this is very early on. We've heard very little. Mm-hmm. So this is my wish list for what I will hear in the future about the game, rather than any kind of judgment on what they've shown so far.
Yeah, this is the first time I've like looked at this image closely. But yeah, it's like Leper, Highwayman, Grave Robber, Plague Doctor. Yeah, who knows? I think I don't know. I remain optimistic, let's say.
I will be happy if I don't have to play the game with the wiki open.
I don't think that's going to be the case. I think that is beyond the realm of possibility
in the game's DNA.
Oh yeah. Ben, what's happening with Arcane's newest release?
I just have two things to say. One is Deathloop came out today, and it got a 10 out of 10 on...
10 out of 10 on IGN?
Yeah, and so some other games like that have gotten that in the past. Inside, The Witness. What's another one that I disagreed with? Like Red Dead Redemption, I think I won. But anyway, usually it's a sign of like something worth checking out. So like that's awesome that a sweet game came out, presumably. But what's not awesome is it's for PS5 and PC only. Mm-hmm. And ooh. I do not have a PS5 yet. And yeah, it is still difficult to get one if you don't want to pay $800.
It's so weird. So weird that that's the case.
Yeah.
I'm exceptionally worried about the multiplayer aspect in this game. Because like you said, 10 out of 10, everything I've read has been absolutely glowing, and I want to play it. But it sounds like a significant portion of the game is these kind of multiplayer invasions, they sounded like to me, for lack of a better comparison point, where another player is controlling the antagonist in certain encounters. That's very cool, and I don't want to be trying to stumble my way through Deathloop for the first time when everyone is level 600, has all the strats figured out, and it's stomping the newbies. So I hope there will be something to compensate for that. I don't think this game will be in a state where you just won't find anyone. That would be no fun. You don't want the was the monk boss fight in
old monk and Demon Souls. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You don't want that kind of thing, but I don't think this will have that problem. It's more just, not wanting to have everything codified by the time I'm going through it.
Yeah. And that's
the thing that confuses me about that is everything I hear about this game, it just sounds like a game where the invasion mechanic just isn't appropriate. Because, I mean, this is basically a roguelike.
Kind of?
I don't know.
Interesting to read people kind of fumble for a description. Because, yes, there is a time loop, but also it just from what I read, it feels different than that.
Yeah.
Like time only moves forward when you move to a new area. And that apparently gives you a lot more freedom to experiment and try things so that it feels less roguelikey, and more Hitman-y, said the person who's only read reviews. So don't take my word for it.
Yeah.
Well, I guess my thing is, my understanding is the game is all about, figuring out a way to do the things in the correct order and, kind of building up this sequence, and just having that randomly messed up from someone doesn't sound fun.
Mm-hmm.
There's a second part to the story, but I'll say this after you. Sorry, what were you going to finish?
Oh, with? I was just going to say, like, that seems like PvP makes sense to me in an action game, not so much in a puzzle game.
The other thing I was going to say is Gas Station Simulator comes out tomorrow.
Does it now?
Whoa!
That's what Steam says.
Oh, dang.
Way to bury the lead, Ben.
Yeah.
I'll need to check that out. I thought the demo was good.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. David, what? I don't even know what to make of this. To make it this headline. So I'll just leave it to you to summarize.
Yeah. So a Steam developer had was developing apparently some sort of VR experience on Steam, and Steam noticed that the game wasn't released yet, but it had a very extensive Steam Workshop library, and then also that Steam Workshop library was nothing but porn.
Oh no.
And turns out that people have taken to using Steam as a free cloud hosting for the porn collection.
Personal or for like share? Well, I don't.
The answer is you don't want to know.
Yeah, like it's not super clear.
So, like, I don't know. First off, why don't you just get a you know, Dropbox. If you're, why are you downloading anything anyway? Everything streams. Come on. But also like, out of like this kind of workaround kind of seems like it is like it would only be necessary if they were doing something illicit with it. It sounds very unsavory, because otherwise, why would you do something like this?
I think what it is our culture has moved on from stashing porn in the woods.
Yeah.
And there's a fundamental human itch that needs to be scratched to do something like that. And so these chipmunks are hiding their porn acorns wherever they can, just out of an evolutionary compulsion.
Mm, yeah. No. Winter's coming. Yeah.
I don't see why they have to like reach around Steam's like rules and policies.
I think you kind of blew that one. Oh God, I don't know. So I mean, Valve obviously is cracking down on this now.
Mm-hmm.
That's good.
Yeah, they want to make money off of it.
Yeah, you don't make money off of Steam Workshop stuff. Oh God, huh? Well. Good for them. Life finds a way. And Dennis, round us out with a Splitgate check-in.
Yeah, this is like literally an order of magnitude shift. Splitgate was just in the news for raising a $10 million round of funding.
Oh, wow.
To support their game because it was taking off and they needed better server architecture and they got funding for that, which blew everyone's mind. This little, I think it's like a 5-person indie studio, gets $10 million worth of funding. Well, surprise, they're back. And this time they raised $100 million in funding. That is going to let them focus on scaling up talent and really giving Splitgate the AAA treatment.
Mm-hmm.
So good for them, incredible for them. I think what's really interesting is the way they are overtly talking about, like, we don't want to get bought. We will not get bought. Like, it is great to have this funding in, but our primary motivation and focus here is staying autonomous and making the game that we want to make.
Nice.
So kudos to them for kind of adhering to that formula. And certainly that hasn't hurt their ability. I'll say their ability to raise funding, if not make money, which I'm certain they will do in the long term as well. I looked up some more detailed notes from what they are kind of focusing on with this round. And I thought it was good to see them talking about, hey, this is going to be a hiring thing, but we are specifically looking to hire the right people.
Mm-hmm.
And like, we see how Blizzard is blowing itself up. We are going to do not that.
Nice.
And that's a good mentality to, for an early stage studio to be able to take.
Yeah. So, yeah.
We're witnessing the birth of the next AAA studio and it seems like they're doing things right from the start.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of hiring that will go on with that money. They're able to have even better server infrastructure. Specifically right now, I think they have two server locations for the entirety of the U.S.,
mm-hmm.
One on each coast, and I would love to see that get better as someone playing from the Midwest.
get a Chicago in there.
Yes, pretty please. I'm sure it's coming.
Yeah.
They also said that an esports announcement is coming soon, and they've got, they're partnering with someone on that, so we could see that scaling up in a big way. And then of interest to me, they said that, their battle pass system, which they have a battle pass for their game, but they're considering going to a Halo Infinite style, mm-hmm. which when I read that, I had no idea what that meant. So I looked it up, and what that means is you buy the battle pass and the battle pass never expires. Which I read that, I'm like, yeah, why doesn't everyone do that? Hold on. Wait, yeah, duh.
So it's a game.
Yeah. that would be excellent. So it sounds like if they're going to follow that style, like, it just takes the pressure off of people needing to finish by a certain time, which is kind of, I won't say abusive, that feels strong, but it is kind of incentivizing players for behaviors that they might not want or might not be getting enjoyment out of. So yeah, good to see them thinking about it that way. And then, you know, there's a litany of other stuff that they're looking at, thinking about, but right now it's about getting the right team behind the game to really scale it up into a AAA enterprise. So yeah, just crazy to see the funding jump by an order of magnitude in a matter of weeks. Clearly there are investment firms that see potential here. And I'm excited for that potential.
It's hard to think of a better pitch and also a pitch that inspires confidence in investors to not want to micromanage, than so many people want to play our game that it doesn't work.
Yeah.
Like, oh no, we have all these potential customers.
You see that they're throwing so much money at us. We need to make the holes to receive the money bigger.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a Splitgate has some good heat on it and is here for the long haul. It looks like, and I look forward to the $1 million round of funding that will come. If 2 points make a line in about a month.
Yeah. Well, good for them. It's always good nice to them. Always nice when a small team, makes good.
Mm-hmm. Oh, one last thing. They were asked about crossover events. Like, oh, will you have, you know, crossover events in your game like Fortnite does? And they said, we will consider it, but we would much rather work with other indie devs than to do the NFL or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Just to have it be another place where fucking Marvel shows up. Yeah.
Exactly. Yes. I like their style. I like the cut of their jib.
Yeah.
So how long until Fortnite with portals?
Oh, it's coming. They're working on it already. I mean, they ripped off Among Us, and they're not going to rip off this. This is one step away, whereas Among Us is 10 steps away. So yeah, it's coming, and screw that. But, you know, it's interesting. Between this and Halo Infinite, the arena first-person shooter is coming roaring back.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, even the Quake re-release, that has some heat on it.
Yeah. Oh, my God, yeah. Which, again, just noting the how much I like the way Splitgate approaches things, they were asked about, like, are you worried about Halo Infinite launching? And their response was like, look, no one game can revive a genre. We are so excited that Halo is coming out because this is a genre that we love, and we just want to be a part of bringing it back, and we know that takes more than one game to do. And it's like, I love you guys. Like, what a great response.
Yeah, that's a
excellent.
That has some very good perspective. Yeah, shows good judgment.
So feel good story to end on here.
Nice. Well, how do you all feel about bundling it up?
Tons.
The credit. Thanks so much, everybody, for listening to level number 385. Hey, Dottie, can you fucking not? Sorry, there's something about that corner that the cats just love scratching at it. Anyway, we really appreciate you taking the time to listen. You know what to do to help us out. Facebook.com/thelevelpodcast, ratings or reviews in Apple Podcasts or Podcast Addict, any place where you get the podcast that has reviews, review us there. Tell your friends, and of course patreon.com/duckfeedtv. Am I forgetting anything?
Don't think so.
Okay. So I've been Cole Ross. You can find me on Twitter at Cole Ross.
I've been Dennis Furia. You can find me in Ireland. Please, nobody rob my house.
This is David Meinsmith. You can find me robbing Dennis's house.
And I've been Ben Merkel. He didn't say anything about squatting.
He didn't say anything about what? Sorry, you cut out.
Squatting. So I'll be squatting at his house. Yeah.
just
actually, that'd be great. You can get our mail.
Hermit crab your way in. Yeah. Well, David's gonna steal the mail. But
good, then it's a federal crime.
Stick around for some titles. Okay, I have two. I have Barrett's kind eyes, and I have porn acorns.
Oh no! I've got Don't Get Hitchcocky, and then I just like the sound of this one: The Judgment Bird.
I just have one. I have Accidental Grind.
Excellent grind. Okay.
I have none. I'm just, you know, it's actually my performance art to represent the fact that all life is ultimately meaningless.
I appreciate that. The Judgment Bird gets got laughs. How do we feel about the Judgment Bird?
I do like that one.
Yep,
I'm fun.
Okay, cool. Well, I'm gonna go because I have work to do.
Miles to go before you sleep. Good luck.
Yep. Take care, everybody.
Hey, see y'all. See you guys.
Yeah.
Have a good week.
Yeah. Take care. Be safe.
See you.
Bye.
Bye.